tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back. Okay, love you. Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the show for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck. The sun has set in New York City, and I am here ready to get into it with all of you before I head to the airport right after I'm done recording this and get ready to go somewhere a little bit warmer. I'm going to St. Thomas with my family for a week, and it's going to be so awesome to be around them right now, to be around people that know me so truly and know my heart so truly and just love me unconditionally. That's going to be really awesome. It's going to feel really good, particularly to hang out with my grandma. Doesn't hanging out with grandma just fix fucking everything? Like, I really feel like I'm going to be healed and rejuvenized and just completely, everything is going to be perfect once I get to sit down in the same room as my grandma and talk to her. Really, there is not a problem that exists in this world that cannot be solved by putting me and Nanny in the same fucking room. And that's the truth. Shout out to my fucking grandma, because I would die for that woman. And I mean it. And I'm so excited to see her. And also my mom and my dad and my siblings. My sister is not going to be on the trip, which really is a travesty, because anytime I'm not with Morgan, I'm sad. Anytime Morgan can't hang out, I wish Morgan could hang out. Every time I think about my sister, I think about how I wish that I could spend more moments with my sister. I think about Morgan and I think about being happy. I think about my sister and I think about what it means to love someone so truly, honestly, and deeply. The amount of joy my sister adds to my life, unmatched. So I wish that my sister was going to be on this vacation, but you know, people have lives and work and obligations, and oh, that's the worst part of adulthood, isn't it? I wish that we could just be 10 years old forever, every family vacation, just at the whim of my parents, because I'm a baby. I'm 10 years old and I'm hanging out with my sister, who's 4 years younger than me. She's 6 and she's just having the time of her life, and so am I. And doesn't it suck that we're not babies anymore? So anyways, that'll be nice to spend some time off the internet, off my phone, just close my eyes, be with my own thoughts, be with the people that know me the best in this world, to be with my family, some people that have known me since my first second on earth. So I think it'll feel really good and very refreshing, very renewing. I'm done with my phone these days. I'm done opening up Instagram and being threatened by tarot readers every other second of the day. Every time I open up Instagram, I'm served a video of some tarot reader that like sucks you in, and they start saying things. You're like, okay, I'll listen to what she has to say. And then halfway through, they switch up on you and they're like, and by the way, if you don't share this video with the first 3 people that appear on your share list, then you're never gonna fall in love and your mom's gonna die and you know, the crazy shit. They start threatening you. If you don't share this video, if you don't like and subscribe, then this is going to happen to you. Those people are evil and karma's coming for you, bitch. I rebuke everything that you post, okay? I think that you deserve jail time. For making content catering to vulnerable people that just feel like they need security or hope. They want a little, you know, something. People lean into spiritual content when they're in like desperate stages in life, when they need support, they need hope, they need something to hang on to, right? That's when people seek out spiritual content. And to know that, to know that your audience is a vulnerable group, and then basically turn on them halfway through the content and threaten them in the name of engagement, y'all deserve fucking jail time for that. I do. I think you're evil and I hate you. And every time I see one of your stupid videos, I sit there and I say, not in my circle, not in my orbit. This video was not produced in the dimension that I live in. Anything that you're saying, wrong, won't happen. I'm protected. Divinely protected, mama. None of this stupid engagement bullshit is gonna get inside my head. But I see people that I love and adore getting roped into shit like this. People like, I have to repost, I have to share, because this random person on the internet told me that my dog was gonna die if I didn't share. I need you guys to start telling these people that they're evil and saying, no, not near me. I don't believe it. Get it away. And moving about with your lives, because these people are feeding off of your vulnerability for engagement and for clicks. And I hate them. I hate them. And it's not everyone, right? There's a lot of really fantastic spiritual content on the internet with people that just pure love of the game, all right? And then there's other people that are just, they're taking advantage of the situation. It's like we've reverted back to 2008, like chain mail. If you do not forward this email to 20 of your closest friends, you don't even want to know it's gonna fucking happen. The Slender Man will come. Like it's just the most ridiculous thing ever. But people believe it and people buy into it. People are superstitious. When you're like, oh my God, they just said that. Like, what if? Evil. Evil. I hate them. Anyways, so I would love to have a break from my phone. Because it's almost like when your phone knows you're having a hard time. And then it's like, let's throw them some tarot card content. Let's throw them some extra spiritual content. And it's all like the type of content where it's like, and now there's a gun to your head. And you didn't know we were going to pull a gun on you. But we are. Now you have to share it, you dumb bitch. Not me. Not me. You cannot con me into sharing that. Sharing your stupid little video. I don't believe you, bitch. You're a fraud. You're a phony. I hate them. I hate them so much. I've been thinking about it all week. It's also going to be nice to be away from internet comment sections for a little bit. There's a lot of judgmental people on the internet, you guys. It is kind of crazy town USA how there are some people on the internet who will hear you say like one sentence and will believe that they know you better than you know yourself, or that they have a better grasp on what's good for you, what's best for you, what choices you should be making than you do. It feels very belittling, you know, when people on the internet talk down to you like you're such a fucking dumbass. And I'm like, I'm a stranger. I don't actually know you. I think that a lot of people love the idea of being a lover girl until they see a lover girl, until they see a real fucking lover girl. Lover girling, and then everyone's got all these opinions on what you should have said or should have done and what was really going to be the best choice for you. And I'm like, God damn. You don't know anything. You got all these opinions about what I needed to do. Trust me. I am the most qualified to make the best decisions for myself. And I am a stranger. And some of you needed that reminder. Okay. I do understand that it usually comes from a good place, but it is interesting to me how harshly people will judge you for being a softie. And I do feel like I talk about this all the time, but I witness it in new ways all the time, how truly uncomfortable some people get when they see someone like choosing to offer understanding and patience and kindness to someone. It's very confusing to me. It is funny to me though, how people that claim to like be all about the lover girl stuff can be the same people that are like talking to me as if I'm a dumbass blinded by love and I can't think straight. It is very interesting to me, okay? Here's your reminder that the lover girls of the world are perfectly capable of making their own choices and assessing what's best for them. And I'm the most qualified one to make those decisions. And I just think we needed a little reminder on that front, okay? We need a little reminder that you see a very small fraction of my life and you know very little about the situations that I choose to talk about on the podcast. I'd never give specific details. I never go in depth with these things. I talk mostly about how it made me feel and my reflections. Okay. And I understand a lot of you just want the best for me and you want me to be happy. And I really appreciate that. But I would really appreciate if you treated me like a full grown person capable of making good choices and trust that I am already making the best choices for me, and that there are things you don't know that inform those choices. Okay. Love you all. Just need to put it out there because it was a little frustrating, some of the judgment I received after being vulnerable on last week's episode and having that judgment more often than not come from a place of like believing that my ability to make good choices has been blinded by the way that I love and care for someone, which is not true. Trust that I made the best choices for me, and I meant it when I said I would do it the same if I had a chance to do it all over again, okay? And I say that with the most peace and love in the universe. Most of you are great at respecting audience and creator boundaries, but I do think that every now and then there are some people that need a reminder that I'm a stranger and that you do not know what's best for me better than I know what's best for me. So I would appreciate withholding judgment on me. And it is like so funny and ironic to me how people will be like, yes, lover girl era. But then the second they see a lover girling, they're like, but wait. Your feelings have blinded your ability to think logically. Like it's such a slippery slope between that and starting to sound like a bro that's like, women are emotional and they can't think straight and make good decisions. And you should have done this instead. No, I shouldn't have. No. No, wrong. I will choose to live life with my heart on my sleeve till I die, no matter what, and it will always be the right choice. I will never regret choosing to love when given the option to, okay? And consider that I have more context than you do that informs the situation. And just trust me when I say I made the best choices for me and that I'm a smart girl that knows what the fuck I'm doing, okay? We're taking calculated risks over here, and you should let me take them. That's all I had to say on that. Super excited to take a break from the internet because my brain is a little exhausted. There's a subreddit that I've been just going to town in over the last week called r/hypothetical situation, because I love a hypothetical situation. I love committing to the bit, going deep into a question that literally nobody gives a fuck about the answer to because it's completely made up and there's just no consequences, right? We can dream and have fun and just go deep into it without it being real. So I love this subreddit because it satisfies a part of my brain that just, it hits good for me. Let me read you some of the ones that have been hot this week. Let's see. Somebody wrote, for $25 million, I'll be handcuffed to you for an entire week, and my job is to annoy you 24/7 whenever I can. Most people would probably still accept the proposal, but the real question is, how will you handle me annoying you for 1 week? If you opt out 1 week before the challenge ends, you lose the money, obviously. If you're religious, don't think I won't annoy you at church. I'm a Satanist, so it doesn't matter which church or religion you adhere to, whether Muslim, Christian, Jewish, atheist, or even pagan, I'll even annoy other Satanists. The first comment on this post is someone saying, I'm just going to sit on the couch and watch porn for a week. You do whatever you want. And they commented back and said, I'm turning off your porn then. And they said, okay, still going to masturbate though. And I really think that that is the way to go in this situation where it's like, okay, for $25 million, someone's going to be handcuffed to you for an entire week and their only job is to annoy you. You need to then decide that your only job is to annoy them. You're like, listen, bitch, if you're here to annoy me, I'm also here to annoy you, except I'm getting paid for it. I'm getting paid to fulfill this job of being fucking annoying to you. And I'm going to get $25 million for it? Yeah, for sure. I think I could do this easily, okay? And you know why I think I could do this easily? Because I grew up with siblings, because I'm the oldest of four, all right? Anybody that grew up with younger siblings, this is easy money. This is easy fucking money. You can't annoy me if I annoy you first, bitch. It's like when you're in a fight with your siblings and you're little and you discover that all you need to do to win every single fight you're in is to kick your feet 100 miles an hour. Doesn't matter. You win every fight no matter what. Just kick those fucking feet and people back up because they're like, oh my God, what do I do? She's kicking 100 miles an hour. She's Michael Phelpsing me. On land, without water, okay? I'm kicking my little fins about. Got to keep your distance. This is how you learn, quickly. Can't annoy me if I annoy them first. It's like that Lady Gaga quote, they can't scare me if I scare them first. I used to repeat that to myself every time I went into my basement as a kid or to the garage to get a drink at night. Because I was like, if there's someone scary in here, I just need to pretend like I am more fucked up than they are. That was also my logic if I was ever going to be kidnapped or anything. I'm like, I just have got to act like I am more off the walls than they are. Like, they think that they're scaring me. They're going to kidnap me from my basement or in my garage. I just need to be more annoying, scarier than they are, acting like I'm, you know, just off the walls, so then they won't want to kidnap me. I don't know if that would actually work though, but I do feel like it would. Or maybe they'd just kill me. No, not that. Not that. I do believe that I could be the right genre of annoying, where it's like just totally not worth it. And this does feel like the same energy as kicking 100 miles an hour in a fight with your siblings. So anyways, this is easy money to me. $25 million for a week of someone annoying me, we're good. We are fucking good, you guys. You wake up tomorrow and every single person in the world has your exact skill set and personality. How long would society last, or do you think you could make it work? Here's the thing. I don't think I'm the worst choice for this. Like, it could definitely be worse. But I'm also not the best choice either. But also, I'm like, does the person that is the best choice exist? Like, if we were going to pick, like, the most well-rounded candidate to be the person whose personality and skill set is duplicated across all of us, we'd be looking for someone who was like, my truth is that I'm always going to love a forbidden romance trope. And you guys know I love a spicy read. But what if the forbidden romance was also a cowboy romance? A hot, steamy, former pro bull rider with an employee that's slowly falling in love with him. If you're a fan of contemporary cowboy romances by authors like Bailey Hanna, Lila Sage, Elsie Silver, or Paisley Hope, you will absolutely love Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose, which is a part of the Crimson Ridge series. Each book in the series reads as a standalone, but they all take place in the same remote small town, and they're all, of course, very spicy. Taming of the Heart is super spicy. It has very explicit sexual imagery and language throughout, which obviously is exactly what I signed up for. And it basically just drops you right into what it would be like to be hired by a ranch for the summer, except your boss is unreasonably hot, literally looks like every fantasy and daydream you've ever had come to life. Oh, and he's already accidentally seen your favorite toy. Okay, you're the eldest daughter. You lock your heart away safely out of sight, but then boom, a former pro bull rider, much older than you, with a mustache, might I add, that makes you weak at the knees, shows up. He's the whole package. And he's luring you in with glimpses of what it might be like to let your guard down for the first time in your entire life. I know you guys are going to love it. I've been sucked in from the moment I picked it up. You can find Taming of the Heart by Elliot Rose wherever books are sold, in print and in ebook. And you can learn more by checking out Kensington Publishing at kensingtonbooks.com. A very kind, smart person, but that, like, was a doctor and could fly a plane and do shit like that, too. So it's like, I'm not the worst choice in the sense that, like, you know, taking someone like me to be the baseline for everybody's skill set and personality is probably better than, like, if we picked Jim Jones. Like, that would be way worse. There's for sure shittier people out there. So picking me to be the baseline for personality and skill set, not the worst thing. The world does get exponentially more anxious to the point where I do think it would set back society in the long run. I think short term we'd be okay, but I do think that this would set us back incredibly. if not simply for the fact that a lot of people need like health treatments, surgeries, things that there's no universe that I'm ever going to be able to do that. I don't even think I know how to change a tire. I know I don't know how to change a tire, okay? I also don't drive regularly. I haven't driven regularly since I was in high school, so I feel like I have a reason for that. No more passing judgment on Maddie today. But like, that's going to be an issue if all of a sudden we copy and paste my present mind into everyone's brains. I could figure it out, though. Okay, and I'm changing my mind now. Because here's the thing. I'm crafty. I'm smart. I've got common sense. I think I could probably, if given time, I could figure out how to change a tire. I do believe that I could come to my own conclusions on that. So you know what? We'll save that. I also know how to Google. Huge. Oh, this is huge. I'm really changing my mind on this. Well, because what if we picked like an old person that barely knows how to work the internet? Hugely not beneficial to us. Here's the thing about me. I know how to Google, okay? I know how to answer my own questions. And a lot of people on the internet cannot say the same, okay? We've entered like a strange timeline in this era of the internet where so many people do not know how to answer their own questions anymore. I saw someone making a video talking about how, like, what an epidemic this is lately. Did Tiffany Ferg make a video about this recently? I think that's what I'm referring to. I think Tiffany Ferguson recently made a video about like learned helplessness on the internet and people that just like refuse to read and like find their own solutions and answers to their questions and things. Like, for example, if someone is on TikTok and they're doing like a tutorial on how to do your makeup. I don't know. I'm just pulling this out of my ass right now. And in the video, they tell you what products they're using and they're giving you all the information of how much it costs, where to buy it, what brand it is. And you will still have people in the comments like, what mascara is that? Because people are, I don't know. We're in this weird era of the internet where people don't, not only when the information is already there, the person that they're asking has already answered it in a way that is would take them mere seconds to figure it out. But it's like, let's say they didn't say it in the video. Most of us have enough common sense to like check the description, check the tags, take a screenshot of the video and zoom in on the bottle, reverse image search it in Google Images. Like, there's easier and quicker ways to get your answer than like a lot of people are willing to put that time into. Anyways, huge that I'm not a part of that population and that I'm a problem solver. And so even the things that I don't know, I do believe that we have a pretty good chance that I could teach myself and get access to said information based on what's available to us on the internet, assuming that the information is already all out there before this switch happens where everyone gets shifted into my personality and skill set. Because like somebody's gonna have to learn how to fly a plane and you're gonna have to learn how to do it through a YouTube tutorial, which is scary. But if we have enough Maddies to test this out, we'll have to sacrifice a few. I do think that eventually we could figure it out. So I might be coming around actually. I might actually believe in myself quite a bit here, mostly because I believe in my ability to learn, and maybe that's what matters the most. But if you modify this and say the internet doesn't exist and all this past information, like you're operating only under what is already in my brain, we're completely fucked. Because then we're just going to regress back to like a time where transportation didn't exist because I can't fly a plane and I can't change a tire. So once all the tires get popped, we're just done. Once they get flat, once they become unusable, we're going back to horse and carriage era. Wouldn't be the worst thing. Maybe it would be good for the aesthetics. So I don't know. I think my response here is that it would be all right in the short term. It would be difficult in the long term. But I do believe that I have the enthusiasm to make it work. You miraculously survive a worldwide and apocalyptic level natural disaster. What are you going to do now? Kill myself? I don't want to survive. I think about this sometimes. First of all, if there's ever an apocalyptic level disaster that happens in New York City, I'm going to the Lower Manhattan Alamo Draft House, because they built that bitch deep into the Earth's core. You have to go down like 5 escalators to get to Alamo Draft House. So it's like you're going deep into the Earth. I'm safe there. Every time I go to the Alamo Draft House, Lower Manhattan, to go watch a movie, I'm like, anything could happen. Anything could be going on the outside right now, and I would literally never know it because I'm so safe inside this Alamo Draft House. So if the apocalypse is happening, I will be at the Alamo Draft House, Lower Manhattan. Hey, say what's up. But for real, if the apocalypse did happen and I miraculously survived, which I'll be honest with you, seems improbable. I'm not trying to survive. I'm finding poison quicker than anybody has ever found poison. I have no desire to live in a world without people and with like critical conditions for survival. I don't want to. I'll just take death, actually. And I'm cool with that completely. I have no desire for like making my life a constant show of survivor that we don't know that we'll ever see a day that gets better. You know, I'd be happy to call it a day. Be like, well, everyone else is gone, so I guess I should go too. Like, what the fuck am I doing here? What's the point in me staying? You get 1 hour to prepare for a 24-hour game of life and death hide-and-seek in California's Disneyland Park. The park is closed for the 24 hours, and it's just you versus a serial killer. If they ever find you, you're dead. No self-defense or fighting back, and no special items, but just what's already in the park. The killer knows that they only have the 24 hours and are pardoned of all crimes if they win. If you win, you get $10 million. If you lose, you die. Are you playing, and what's your plan to survive the 24 hours? I don't know. This is hard because I do feel like I could survive. I don't know if it's just like a game of hide and seek, and the amount of land that we have to hide in is like absurd. I mean, Disneyland is ginormous, and I just feel like I could hide well pretty easily because it's just one guy versus me. The odds of him being able to find my very specific hiding spot, knowing that the park is so big, seems pretty small. Like, I do feel like I could probably survive. But is it a risk that I want to take? Like, is this a risk that's worth it? $10 million is a lot of money, but if you die, you're dead, you know? So that there's a lot at risk here. But I really do feel like I could. Like, it doesn't actually seem like it's that fucking hard to hide from one guy. If it was like a team of serial killers scouring Disneyland, that would make it harder. Right? But if it's just me versus one fucking guy, I feel like we can do this easy. Because in order to find me, they'd have to like really check every square inch of the fucking park, which is impossible in a 24-hour time span if it's one person that's doing it. I think I'll do it. I think I'll take the risk. Put me in there with the serial killer for 24 hours. I believe pretty confidently that I could do this. Imagine there is an afterlife. Would you rather go into each new life with memories from your previous life or a clean slate? Why? Things to consider. Number one, you know when you meet someone special and you feel like you've known them for ages? If you choose to carry your memories into your next life, when you meet people you have an innate connection with, you will know if you met them before in previous lives. This, you can argue, will strengthen your connections and relationships, thus making you feel fulfilled. Two, if you carry memories of your past lives into your next one, you might be able to navigate life better. And three, carrying memories from previous lives may also mean that you may be carrying PTSD into your next life or traumas. I feel inclined to say clean slate just because I don't know how much like having this like these random pieces of information from my previous life would really help me because it's not my current life. Right? So it's like knowing that such and such happened in completely separate circumstances. I don't know provides like enough value for me to want to bring in all of like the pain that it would be caused by bringing, having to carry through like the trauma of all of your past lives in your present life. Like, I don't know that the handoff there is enough of a positive to outweigh the negative. So my gut is to say clean slate, but there's somebody who commented on this that I like what they said. They said that they would do clean slate, but only if they get a stat board when they die. So it's like you married the reincarnation of your fourth grade teacher from life 7. So like at the end of it, at the end of each life, you get to know how you overlapped high level, which I agree with. I think that if it's like when you're in your life, your new life, when you've been reincarnated and you're in this new timeline, I don't think you should have access to the old timelines. But once you die and you're out of the timeline before you've been reincarnated into your next timeline, I think it'd be cool to be able to know at that point from like a bird's eye view, just for like the fun fact of it all. But then I forget it the second I'm reincarnated, so it doesn't impact me or influence me in like a negative way or a positive way. But it still exists and it still is happening. Regardless. Some of these are so stupid. Somebody wrote, some lady comes up to you and asks, show me your butt and then I'll show you my boobs. What do you do? Actually, they didn't write what do you do. They said, what do you do? What the fuck? Show me your butt and I'll show you my boobs. What do you do? Did a 9-year-old write this? You show me butt boobs and what do next? But to answer this question genuinely for the 9-year-old that asked it, I don't think that the stakes are high enough here for me to do anything at all. I have boobs of my own, so I can just look at them if I need my boob fix. You know what I mean? I don't know that some random lady being like, but for boobs is going to be enough for me. I just don't know. I don't think that's going to cut it. All right. This is definitely going to be a shorter episode of the podcast, but let's dive into some submissions. If you don't know, there is a submission box for the show where you can submit anything and anything that you'd like. Any requests for advice, stories you want to tell, secrets you want to spill at the sleepover, you just pop them in that box and there is a good chance I might read out your submission on the show. So let's get this show rolling because Maddie's gonna go to the airport. Hello, Maddie. Love the podcast. I watch every single episode. I just want you to know that I am also seeing your Instagram activity. Under every video of a monkey acting like a person, I see that you have liked it. I feel like you taught me something about myself because I didn't know that I was doing that. I mean, I just like be scrolling and liking things and I just didn't realize there was a pattern that every video I see of a monkey doing something strange, I toss it a like. But I feel like I probably do that for most animal videos, like animals doing anything. I'm like, let me give him a like. Why not? Look at him. He's doing something kooky and crazy. Why not? Hello, Maddie. I love your show so much and your wisdom has helped me grow so much as a person and just changed my general outlook on life. So thank you. I have been with my boyfriend for over a year and a half and he is truly everything I could ever want. However, sometimes my insecurities get in the way. For example, when he is not in the mood to have sex, I can't help but think it's because I'm not attractive. And to be honest, it makes me feel pretty shitty sometimes. How do I not let my insecurities enter the relationship and make me feel insecure in our connection? I think my answer might sound a little counterintuitive, but I do think that it's helpful. And what I would say here is you need to invite your insecurities to come sit at the table with you. You need to pull up a chair, offer them a seat, and invite your insecurities to come hang out for a little bit. We're not going to wish them away. We're not going to pretend they don't exist. We're not going to open the door for shame and allow ourselves to feel like we are the worst ever because these insecurities have popped up. We're just going to invite the insecurities to sit in the room with us and linger for a little while. And I know that sounds and probably feels counterintuitive, because when insecurities are popping up for us in a relationship, a lot of time it brings up a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. We feel like there's something wrong with us for these insecurities popping up. We wish that they would just go away and that things could be smooth sailing, that we didn't have to feel some type of way about, you know, these little minor situations that are popping up. We want to wish those feelings away from us. So it seems counterintuitive to invite them in and give them a proper place at the table. But I think that that is the best way to get to the root of them and to break down why you feel that way or why they exist. When we're able to look at our insecurities and accept them for what they are, accept the role they're playing in our life for what it is, without the shame, without wishing it away, I think we open the door to more self-compassion. And as a result, we're able to move through some of those insecurities a little bit easier than if we were otherwise moving from a place of shame and guilt rather than self-acceptance and self-compassion. I think it's okay for your insecurities to enter your relationship. I think insecurities naturally, your insecurities and your partner's insecurities are a huge part of a relationship. And I don't think we have to wish them away and invite more shame in as a result. I think it's better to give our insecurities a room of their own. Let them set up shop a little bit so that we can get to know them a little bit better without all the shame, and learn how to give ourselves a little bit more self-compassion as a result. The thing is that we all have insecurities, and we all have things that are going to pop up for us in relationships that we have to work through with ourselves, with our partner. And half the battle is being self-aware of it and knowing when an insecurity pops up that, that's my insecurity talking. To have an insecurity, a thought pop into your head, and to be able to watch it and witness it and be like, oh, and that is my insecurity. To be able to identify it, put a name to it, rather than having this thought pop into your brain and accepting it as the truth. Because that's the problem, right? Is when we let our insecurities run our lives and tell us that something is the truth when it's not the truth. It's hard to just poof, make them go away. What I think is an easier first step is to invite them to have a seat at the table and get good at identifying what is the what is connected to your insecurity and what isn't. These thoughts that you're having, these worries that come up when you're in a relationship, getting good at being like, oh, that is my insecurity. That is coming from a place of insecurity. That is not something that is rooted in truth. It came from this past experience that I had. This and this happened to me, and it taught me this about myself in relationships. It has made me worried about this in relationships. And now, because this happened, my insecurity is popping up and I am feeling like this. That doesn't make it the truth. That doesn't mean that I need to freak out about it. But let's acknowledge that it exists and then open up a conversation with my partner so that we can work through it together. Oh my God. Mango, please. Her booty's in my head. I think she knows I'm leaving, which I can't even think about because it's going to make me very sad. But I do think she knows that I'm leaving for the airport soon. I'm going to miss her so much, but she will be having a fun time with my friends that are cat sitting for me while I'm gone. So it'll be good. So anyways, to recap everything here, I don't think that we need to wish our insecurities away or invite in shame because we are wishing our insecurities away. The truth is that we all are going to have insecurities and things that pop up for us in a relationship. And I think we serve ourselves better by sitting down with those insecurities, observing them neutrally, learning how to better spot them when they pop up, when to identify when something is a product of your insecurity and not necessarily the truth, and then getting more comfortable with interrogating them when they pop up. Once you're able to identify it, dig into it. When it pops up, have a conversation with your partner. Let it be an open thing. Let's work on getting rid of the shame that comes with having insecurities in relationships rather than getting rid of our insecurities in relationships. You know, because I think shame is the real root of the problem and evil here. It's not necessarily your insecurity. It's the shame that comes with it. Hello, Maddie. I love your work. Since you talk a lot about love and relationships, I wanted to know what are your thoughts on why it seems like romantic relationships are so much harder to find slash maintain than friendships. I feel like there's an overwhelmingly negative discourse about love and an overwhelmingly positive one related to friendships, especially female friendships. I'm curious on why that is and would love to know your thoughts. Well, I think there are some like very reasonable explanations for why this is. The first one that feels like the most obvious to me is just that a lot of the world is monogamous. So we're looking at something where we're fulfilling a role for one person. There is only one slot available for this position. Versus with friends, most people are viewing friendships as something that is like completely abundant. You can have as many friends as you want. There's no limits to it. Obviously, there are like some limits because there's only so much time you have in the day as a person to like pour into certain friendships. But everyone also has different standards for what it means to be a friend, how much investment they want in a friendship. And that varies across the board. You have, you know, some people that you're best friends with, talk every day level best friends, and then you have talk once a week best friends. You have, you know, coworkers and other people that fill your life. Like, I think in general, it is easier to make friends because there we have an abundance of them, and there's an abundance of different ways friendship can look. So it's not like there's one position that we are looking to fill in one specific way. We can be friends with all kinds of people and have different levels of investment with different friendships, different ways of relating to each people in each friendship. Like, there's just more room for variety and diversity in our friendships because we have room for so much more of them, versus because a lot of us are monogamous and we're looking to find this one person that we're going to be in a relationship with, that naturally puts more pressure on finding the one. It's harder to find the one versus finding a friend. It's a different set of standards, right? Because it's one versus a bunch. Also, in a relationship, we're judging on so many more factors than you would in a friendship. So that naturally makes it harder too. Because in a friendship, you're just judging them based on like your emotional connection to each other, how much you guys relate to each other, how your lives overlap, your values, all of those things you do in a relationship as well. But on top of that, you're looking for physical compatibility, sexual compatibility. You're looking at like the timeline of your lives and what you want to do, where you want to live. You know, when you're making friends, that doesn't matter. You're not going to be like, well, I can't be friends with someone who doesn't want to live in New York forever. But when I'm looking for a future partner, them wanting to live in New York City is a pretty big deal because I want to live in New York forever. So we shouldn't date if they don't want to live here forever. But like with a friend, that just has no bearing whatsoever. There's more things like that, like what you look for in a long-term partnership, if people want kids or not, what a marriage looks like to you, what if you even want to be married. Like, there's so many more questions that need to be answered that you need to be on the same page about in a relationship that just, it doesn't matter in a friendship because it's a different kind of connection. Now, with that being said, I do think that there can be friendships that act as like companions and life partners in the same way that relationships do. So I think that there are opportunities for friendships to become more like harder to find. Like, that level of friendship is harder to find, someone that is like a life partner to you. In general, I think that is harder to find. Because like, I look at my friendship with Ashley, who, for those of you that don't know, is my best friend. It would be wild to me if you didn't know that, though, because I feel like I talk about her all the time. But Ashley is like a different level of friendship to me. She is like so special to me, one of one, irreplaceable. We deeply care for each other, and we go through life with this care that we have for each other being at the forefront of everything. Everyone that has ever met me for like any brief amount of time ever knows about Ashley. And same with people in her life. So it's like, to have someone in your life that is so important to you, and you have like such a deep care, and you're so intertwined in each other's lives. It is more than a friendship. It's a more than a best friendship. It's like sisterhood. And so I do think that's hard to find too. You know, like I think that like friendship is super abundant, but I can't replicate Ashley. I think when you're looking for like a real true partnership with someone where it's like you care so deeply and your lives are overlapping and you're so intertwined in that way and it's mutual and all of that, like it is hard to find. And I think that exists both for romantic relationships and these like very deep intimate friendships. Like I can't replicate Ashley. I'm not meeting people like Ashley all the time. She is different. She is on a different fucking level. And the relationship I have with her is like, yeah, it's just so special. It is a kind of life partner. She and I will be friends until we kick the fucking bucket, okay? Like, it is different. So I don't even think it's necessarily exclusive to romantic relationships, but it's this like level of intimacy and intertwining your lives with one another. And then I think romantic relationships have like an added layer on top of it where like you're looking for physical compatibility, sexual compatibility, wanting to live in the same location, wanting marriage, wanting kids, having so much more than aligns when you're trying to build a partnership, a long-term partnership with someone. So I think it makes sense. I think it makes complete sense that finding love is harder than finding friendship. Completely. There's no confusion about that on my end. And I'm sure there, you know, there's something to be said about just like how sort of cynical people are about modern dating and how things like dating apps have made it harder for people to connect. There's things to be said there as well. But I think even ignoring all of that, it was already going to be harder to find a relationship than it would be to find a friendship. But obviously there is even more added layers if we're gonna bring in talking about like how the current state of dating impacts our ability to find love and to find good matches for us. Which, I mean, you guys know how I feel. I think it's a little bleak right now in terms of modern dating and how we're meeting people and how effective it is, but I think it was hard regardless, even without all that. So it is what it is. All right, and with that, it's getting late, so I really need to finish packing and get headed out here. Give Mango a few extra special kisses on the forehead before I go leave. I wish I could take her with me. I wish I could package her up and just keep her inside my back pocket forever and do everything with her. It would be the best to me. But alas, Mango is an indoor cat and she doesn't like leaving home, which I completely fucking understand. She's very flexible in that she will let me take her places. I take her home to visit my family when I go for the holidays, and during the summer I brought her with me too. And she likes traveling once she's there, and she's very nice and polite and not fussy at all. She's quite easy to travel with, but I know that she prefers to be home. So this is where she will be while I'm in St. Thomas. And with that, I'm gonna go. So thank you guys so much for hanging out. Sorry this is a shorter episode. I will be back next week and we'll talk some more, and I'll be 27 next week. Crazy. Okay, that's it. Love you guys so much. Bye.